Ms. Kindlarski, Mr. Gingras.
Good morning. My client, Christopher McMahon, went through the worst 3.5 years that any human being could go through. Sergeant Kindlarski told his school that he was a rapist before any charges were ever brought against him. Sergeant Kindlarski told guardian ad litem in his custody battle that he was a child pornographer when no charges were ever brought against him. And when those things didn't work, later on, Sergeant Kindlarski helped Judy DeBruin manufacture a claim that he molested his own daughter. Judge Shabazz ruled that there were material issues of fact as to his constitutional claims, but that there were adequate post-deprivation measures, namely state law claims in Wisconsin. We strongly disagree. As Judge Swagert said in Fryer, normally to consign a due process petitioner to post-deprivation tort remedies is to consign him to years of potentially fruitless and expensive litigation. And if this court follows this rule,
well, what in the way of pre-deprivation remedies do you want?
There were no possible pre-deprivation remedies because
no pre-deprivation remedies, then they're only post-deprivation, right?
Except if they're adequate, only if they're adequate. If they are inadequate,
why isn't state law adequate? What's missing from it?
For several reasons. First, delay.
Well, how is that different from any litigation?
The custody battle itself is a good example. It took virtually 3.5 years. Secondly,
well, I don't understand. Were you putting deadlines on state court litigation or what?
No, I'm not doing that, Your Honor. I would never try to do that. What I'm trying to say and get across to the court is that the remedies, for example, with respect to law enforcement officers in particular, the remedies under state law are likely to be fatal to the...
Why? What's the matter with state law?
Because of the immunity that is given under the state law statutes to governmental actors such as law enforcement officials.
Is that any different in Wisconsin law from any other state?
That's exactly my point, that whenever you...
How can that be your point? I'm asking you a question. Is Wisconsin law different in this respect from other states?
I do not think so. In fact, the case of...
Well, but then, you'd wipe out the whole proposition that when you have unauthorized, unconstitutional behavior by public officers, you have to, you're remitted to your state remedies.
I think...
Adequate. Well, not can't have 50 states not having adequate remedies.
I'm not saying it is applicable in every state and to every fact situation, but here, in this particular fact situation, where you have a sheriff, a law enforcement officer, typically those officers, under the state laws, have immunities for discretion, for discretionary authority. And because of that, there is no adequate state law remedy against that officer. He has violated the Constitution, potentially. Judge Shabazz has so ruled. But the state law remedy, as set forth in Belcher versus Norton, is inadequate. After our briefs were filed in this case, this court in Belcher versus Norton, 497 F3rd 742, held that a claim against a sheriff under state law, and this was in Indiana, is inadequate because of the very immunity that I'm talking about. And in Wisconsin, under 89380 sub 4, there's exactly the same kind of immunity given to law enforcement officers for discretionary decisions while acting in their employment. And so what I'm saying to Your Honor is that Judge Shabazz found a constitutional violation, at least a material factual issue as to that, and then declared that the state law remedies were adequate. And they are not in this particular fact situation. They may be in others, but with law enforcement officers in particular, they're not. There can be no doubt that there's a material factual dispute that Mr. McMahon's legal status was altered by the conduct of the defendant Kinlarski. I think it's just common sense that in this day of education with children, whenever there are allegations of this sort, it is going to severely damage your career.
Well, how is that a factual issue? Isn't the question of whether there's a protected property interest at stake for a procedural due process claim a question for the court?
That's correct, but the appellees are challenging on this appeal that there is no material issue of fact as to that issue that I just mentioned.
I just suggested it was an issue of law. Do you disagree with that?
I do. I think it's a combined issue of law and fact. The court has generally held in this circuit that where someone's employment is substantially altered or affected in a negative way, that there's a potential procedural due process claim. And I think these facts have met that burden.
Private employment?
Private or public.
Doesn't he have a perfectly good defamation remedy?
No, for exactly the same reason. Mr. Kinlarski has discretionary immunity when he went up to UW-Eau Claire and said that Mr. McMahon was a rapist. It was within the scope of his employment. He testified that it was within his job duties to investigate that issue. And when he went up there, he made the decision, maybe wrongly, but within his discretion.
You can't sue a public officer in Wisconsin for defamation?
Excuse me, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
You can't sue a public officer in Wisconsin for defamation?
It will be probably meaningless and futile because of that immunity statute. And we cited the case on Friday. We submitted this decision on Friday to the court, and that is the Belcher decision, along with citation to a Wisconsin case, the 3M case, where this exact kind of situation happened. It was a defamation claim against 3M, and the governmental officers were granted immunity under this very statute. The lower court did not address Mr. McMahon's substantive due process claims, and we think they are valid as well. And in fact, in the case of Brokaw versus Mercer County, which we cited in our reply brief, that case is very analogous factually to this case. There, governmental officials, including a sheriff, along with grandparents, made misrepresentations to take the child away from the normal or the natural parents, and the court held that there was a right to pursue both procedural and substantive due process claims. And the court gave extensive...
Did you argue in your brief this point about immunities of state officers?
No, we did not, Your Honor.
Well, isn't it a little late?
I don't believe so. Up until August 15, the Belcher case, no court in this circuit had ever addressed that immunity issue in this context. And so we're bringing it up on a timely basis now, pursuant to your rules, on the submission of decisions that have come out since the filing of the briefs. I see my light has come on. If it's all right with the court, I'll save my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Fox?
Judge Posner, Judge Evans, Judge Sykes, thank you for this opportunity. Plaintiff is just dead wrong and late in his argument about there being immunity for defamation claims. First of all, he's waived that argument because he did not advance it before the trial court in opposition to summary judgment, as he reasoned that post-deprivation state remedies would be inadequate. He did not raise it in his brief in principle in this court, He did not raise it in his reply brief in this court. It was raised Friday by implication, using the vehicle of sending a couple of cases to this court.
You represent the private party defendants, as I understand it, and the statute doesn't apply to them anyway.
It does not apply to them. It was a point I was going to make. I do, and I should have clarified that. I represent Grandma and Grandpa and the mother of J.A. But I want to point out to the court that the decision that they sent on Friday was a 1994 Wisconsin State Appellate Court decision, which held under the facts of that case, and under the facts of that case only, discretionary immunity applied to the defamation alleged there. Despite the fact that counsel in that case in 1994, the Olson case, is the very same counsel who represented Mr. McMahon here, and therefore knew about that case at the time this summary judgment motion was made, they did not raise... Pardon?
A lot of people forget things in 10 years.
Well, that's what I think most people would remember. They did not raise it with regard to the defamation claim they brought. In fact, they affirmatively asserted a defamation claim. So not only do we have a waiver here, issue here, Judge, we have an estoppel issue, a judicial estoppel. They said, we've got defamation, we've got abusive process, we've got malicious prosecution, we've got intentional interference with employment opportunities, and we have intentional infliction of emotional distress. And okay. They were using the same facts to underpin those claims as they were for the constitutional claim.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Fox. Ms. Ford?
May it please the court, I represent the defendant appellees, the Vilas County Sheriff John Niebauer and Detective Sergeant Ken Larsky. I'll refer to them as the Vilas County Sheriff's Department. I am somewhat surprised, and I would ask this court to be very, very careful at this point about what is accepted as evidentiary fact in the record from the perspective of all parties, considering the representations that have been made to this court by counsel. And I say this with much disappointment, but I have to say that nowhere in the record did Mr. Ken Larsky ever tell anyone that Mr. McMahon was a rapist. What he did say was that he had sex with 17-year-old Kristen DeBruin and acknowledged that he committed statutory rape. He also impregnated her. He then, according to what the Vilas County Sheriff's Department learned, and this is all they knew, began to harass her, followed her to Illinois after she became married, engaged in a computer relationship under a pseudonym, posing as a woman, then accused her of child abuse. His name is Blue Kelly Lilly, just out of interest. And then accused her of child abuse when she acknowledged something on the internet that, believing that he was her female friend. He was then discovered during the course of looking at his computer to have 12 of some of the most horrific images of child pornography I hope to ever in my life see. When videotaped, being interviewed by my officer about these images,
he said... That might have been planted there, though.
Well, he was... During the course of the videotaped evidence, and this should be watched, the officer Ken Larsky actually put these images in front of him one by one, and he said... He looked, and you can see him looking at them and saying, oh, those are pop-ups. I look at them. I'm a man. Of course I look at them. And these are pop-ups, actually.
What does he mean by pop-ups?
Pop-ups meaning pop-ups that you don't want to come up on your screen, perhaps something for sale, typically, or an advertisement that you don't want to come up on your screen but automatically comes up. He claims that photographs of 2- and 3-year-old individuals engaged in sexual relations were pop-ups. And when asked about them, he said, well, I'm a man. I go to them. In fact, I go to the teen sites because women who are 18 already look 40. Now, this is in the videotape that we have of this individual.
And what about women of 18?
Women of the age of 18 already look 40.
Oh.
So... This is what the Sheriff's Department knew. Now, what the Sheriff's Department did with that information and information subsequently received that Mr. McMahon cared for his child in such a way that she had symptoms of sexual assault, that being swelling. And
I'm going to stop you, Ms. Ford, because all of this is jury argument, and we're here on summary judgment, and I'd like you to focus on the legal issues in the case.
All right. I believe that all claims, the equal protection claim, every claim with the exception of the substantive and the procedural due process claims have been waived. In fact, the state law claims have been waived by virtue of the fact that they were not briefed, and I think that has been fairly well conceded. The evidentiary facts versus the non-evidentiary facts. I'm going to ask that the Seventh Circuit do something that actually take a look at Judge Shabazz's decision in terms of his reliance on the expert testimony of one Kevin Schutz in terms of finding a material issue of fact on the substantive due process claim and the procedural due process claim. Kevin Schutz testified that he did not do anything other than speak to Mr. McMahon about Mr. McMahon's case. Kevin Schutz issued his report without conducting any independent investigation. I asked him repeatedly in his deposition what he did. He came up with nothing. He may as well have been looking into a crystal ball when he issued his opinion, and I'd ask that this court take a close look at whether or not that evidence should be considered under the de novo review standard. With regard to the procedural due process claim, I would direct the court's attention to a very similar and very important case, I believe, and that is Brown versus City of Michigan Brown, which is a Seventh Circuit case that states that when you have a property interest, we're talking about the property interest claims, you have to show that you have an interest that's created by state law. It doesn't arise out of the Constitution. It doesn't arise out of thin air. It's not a unilateral expectation. In this particular case, Mr. McMahon would have this court believe that he had a statutory, legally created expectation to go not to the school of his choice and engage in the program of his choice at the expense of a legal investigation into what my officers believed were legitimate accusations against him. They've yet to direct my attention to any statute that confers such a procedural due process right. They've yet to direct any court to the attention of any statute that prohibited any of the acts Officer Kinlarski took in terms of his investigation or created some sort of statutory expectation that rises to the constitutional level on the part of Mr. McMahon that was violated in this case. And the same is true with regard to his liberty interest claims and his reputation. He simply failed to meet his burden, his legal burdens of proof. Now, he can sling mud all he wants, but what he had to do with regard to his liberty interest and his reputation claim is show more than just defamation, which is a state law claim. And, by the way, as far as the immunity issue goes, there is a well-recognized Wisconsin exception, and that is the willful and malicious act exception to immunity. In addition, immunity oftentimes does not apply to statutory claims with statutory remedies. Defamation seems to me to be an intentional act, and the acts alleged here could arguably give rise to a defamation claim, not to mention the fact that the defamation claim and an intentional interference with employment claim, an intentional infliction of emotional distress claim, and yet another state law claim are part and parcel of this lawsuit already. So how can counsel at one side of his mouth say we have no available state law remedies while at the same time before this very court prosecuting them, even though they're not subject to this appeal, they're still before this court on de novo review because they were before this court with regard to Judge Shabazz and they're alleged in the complaint. Also, the Paul case would the Brown versus City of Michigan case would have to be overruled. In Brown versus City of Michigan, we had a gentleman who was banned from a park because he was accused of sexual abuse of children. The Seventh Circuit held no state law right. There is no state law right for this individual to have been in a park. The stigma plus factor of this case and the Paul case, which is a Supreme Court case, requires the Mr. McMahon to show that a right or status previously recognized by state law has been extinguished for him, something he has simply failed to do. This is a defamation claim under the guise of a constitutional claim, and, Your Honors, we should not be before this court.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Ford. Mr. Gingras, how much time does he have? 1 minute? Anything
further? After a full trial, Judge Mangerson awarded my client sole custody of his daughter, despite all these allegations of child pornography and everything else. Pornography was planted on his computer in a very suspicious manner, and Sergeant Konlarski allowed this, enabled this whole process to happen throughout the entire course of that 3.5 proceeding. There has to be some constitutional relief when a governmental actor goes to that extent to harm somebody. Has to be. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you to all counsel.